me very quickly in my classes that I've had with Donnie. We're working through 1 Timothy. And the first thing that really stuck out to me is Paul makes the point, it is an honor to preach the word. It is an honor to teach the word. That's true in preaching, and it's true just in everyday life, in Bible class teaching, and from day to day. And that has truly impressed me. It is an honor to preach the word. And so for that, I'm thankful both to God and to the elders here for allowing me this opportunity. Tonight, I want us to talk about something that we often don't look at the whole picture of. We often think about only certain aspects of it, and the others we figure, well, everybody knows. Everybody knows about it, so what's the point in talking about it? Tonight, what I want us to talk about is authority. Authority. We're going to develop 3 points tonight. First, we're going to define authority. We're going to see what it is in a biblical context. Second, we're going to look at the authority of God. And finally, we're going to come back and look at the authority from God that He has given. In our text tonight in Genesis chapter 39, it says, "So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. So it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand." He left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And back in verse 4, that is called authority. All that he had, he put under Joseph's authority. I looked up just a general definition of authority in a biblical context with both Strong's and Vine's. Strong says it's to have or wield full privilege over. To have or wield full privilege over. Vine says it's the power of one whose will and commands must be obeyed by others. What that tells me is that authority means power. It means wielding some sort of power. It also tells me that authority means you have some kind of influence. It also tells me that authority means control. It means control. So, our definition of authority that we'll see tonight is that of power, influence, and control over someone or something. So now we're going to look at the authority of God. We often think, okay, we know this. We know what God has authority over. But do we really? When our friends come to us and they say, why do you do what the Bible tells you to? Can we find a passage that tells them why we answer to the authority of God? Can we find a passage that even talks about the authority of God? We can. But often, we fail to look at them in our own private study. So God, first of all, has authority over nature. We see this from simple passages such as Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the first 6 days that is outlined there for us, it's all about how God created everything around us. Every single thing around us, God created. What we can infer from that is the very fact that it was created by Him means He has control over it. Every single aspect of earth, of all of creation, God has control over. Turn over to Job chapter 38. This is a wonderful example of God's power, influence, and control seen here in Job chapter 38 and 39. We're going to go quickly through some points that God makes here to Job about His power over nature. In chapter 38 and verse 12, he says, "Have you ever in your life commanded the morning and caused the dawn to know its place?" Job, have you had power over the morning, over the sun rising? Have you had power over dawn? I have. That's what God is saying. I have that power. In verse 16, it says, "Have you entered into the springs of the sea, or have you walked in the recesses of the deep?" Job, do you know what's in the sea? Do you know how the sea works? I do. We're starting to see that God knows He has authority over the oceans, over the earth, over nature in itself. God has that authority. In verse 22, "Have you entered into the storehouses of the snow, or have you seen the storehouses of the hail?" Do you understand, Job? Do you understand the snow? Do you understand the hail? God says, "I do. I understand it perfectly." God created it, therefore He has authority over it. And in chapter 39, that's where most people think of when they think of God's power over nature. In the very first verse, "Do you know the time the mountain goats give birth? Do you observe the calving of the deer? Can you count the months they fulfill, or do you know the time they give birth?" Do you understand how animals work, Job? Do you understand why they do what they do and how they do what they do? God says, "I do. I created them." We will not take the time to go over any more, but we can see just from these few verses that God has power, influence, and control, therefore authority over nature. God also has power over Satan. Back at the beginning of Job, in Job chapter 1, beginning in verse 7, it says, "And the Lord said to Satan, 'From where do you come?' Then Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Roaming about on the earth and walking on it.' And the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil.' And Satan answered the Lord, 'Does Job fear God for nothing? Hast thou not made a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But put forth thy hand now and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse thee to thy face.' Then the Lord said to Satan, 'Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not put forth your hand on him.' So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord." Satan, in order to tempt Job, had to go to God first. He could not do it of his own power. God had made a hedge about him, as we see in verse 10. Satan could not overcome God. Satan had to seek permission from God. God has authority over Satan. Even more so in Matthew chapter 4 and in verse 10. When Jesus was in the wilderness and Satan came to tempt him. Chapter 4 and verse 10 of the book of Matthew says, "Jesus said to him, 'Be gone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only.' Then the devil left him." Jesus said, "Be gone," and the devil left. Jesus, as the Son of God, as God, John 1 and verse 1, had power over Satan. He had authority over Satan. Satan answered to him. When Jesus said it, Satan had to do it. in Luke 22 and in verse 31. Luke 22 and verse 31, Jesus is talking to Simon Peter. He said, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has asked permission to sift you like wheat." Some translations will say demanded permission, with a footnote saying obtained by asking. Satan had to ask in order to tempt Peter. Just like Job, Satan could not do it on his own. He could not do it just out of his sheer will. God had to allow it. So God has authority over nature. He has authority over Satan. He also has authority over man. In Psalm 22 and in verse 28, Psalm 22 and in verse 28, the psalmist speaks of the nations in reference to all men. In verse 28, he says, "For the kingdom is the Lord's, and he rules over the nations." He rules over the nations. God has power over man. Just like he has power and authority over nature and over Satan, he has power over man. Again, he has power over man, and we see that in Romans chapter 14. Romans chapter 14. In verses 7 and 8, this is talking to Christians, but the principle is still the same. It says, "For not one of us lives for himself, and not one dies for himself. For if we live, we live for the Lord, or if we die, we die for the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or die, we are the Lord's." Again, this is talking to Christians, but the principle can stand for all men. No matter what happens to us, we are the Lord's in the fact that he created us. He put us here on this earth. We are his. Our bodies answer to him. When it is time for us to die, by his creation, how he designed us, we die. God has authority over man. I know we quickly covered that, but I hope it sticks with us how many ways we can see through the passages in the Bible that God has authority. We often just think about, well, of course he has authority. He's God. But can we show that? Can we prove that? Now we're going to see the authority from God. The authority that God delegated to individuals and groups of people. First off, God gave authority to Jesus. In the last chapter of Matthew, in Matthew 28, Jesus says, "All authority has been given to me on heaven and on earth." All authority has been given. He did not have it just by his own sheer will. What this tells me is that God had to give him authority. And we know that God was in agreement with this statement by all the miracles that Jesus performed. And when Jesus was baptized, a voice came out of heaven as a dove saying, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." God gave Jesus authority. Also in Matthew chapter 7, Matthew chapter 7 and in verse 29, we'll see this phrase mentioned countlessly throughout the Gospels. It says, "For he was teaching them as one having authority." We all know people that the very voice that they speak with shows that they have authority over you in some way, whether it be your boss at work, When your boss comes to you and talks to you, and you know to answer to them, it's because they have the voice of authority. Jesus had this voice of authority. And as we just saw in chapter 28, the authority given to him was from God. For he was teaching them as one having authority. Also, in Mark 16, a passage we all know very well in the Great Commission, he said, "Go out into all the world and preach and teach the gospel to every creature." Jesus said that. Could Jesus say that without God's authority? Again, we saw that in Matthew chapter 28. God gave him that authority. He had the authority to send the apostles out into the world and teach the gospel. Who else received authority from God? Well, the apostles received authority from God through Jesus, but from God. Again, in Mark chapter 16, Jesus was speaking to the then disciples, soon to be apostles, "Go out and teach the world." He gave them authority to spread the gospel. He gave them power with tongues, power to pick up any deadly serpent and drink any deadly poison. God gave them power and authority. In 2 Thessalonians in chapter 3, beginning in verse 7, it says, "For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example, because we did not act in an undisciplined manner among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it, but with labor and hardship we kept working night and day, so that we may not be a burden to any of you. Not because we do not have a right to this, but in order to offer ourselves as a model for you, that you might follow our example." The New King James says in verse 9, "Not because we do not have the authority." The apostle said, "We have this authority. We have it, but we're being models and examples to you. We have authority." In Luke chapter 9 and in verse 1, it says that Jesus gave power to cast out demons to the apostles. Luke 9 and verse 1, it says, "He called the 12 together and gave them power and authority over all the demons and to heal diseases." The apostles were given authority. I hope this is impressing upon us the point that authority has to be given. Authority is from God because He is our Creator. It has to be given to us in order to have any. As the apostles and Jesus have authority, so does the civil government. In Matthew 22 and in verse 19, Jesus says, "Show me the coin used for the poll tax." And they brought him a denarius. And he said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" They answered to him, "Caesar's." Then he said to them, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." Jesus said, "We answer to the government. We answer to the law of the land. They ask us to pay taxes, we pay taxes. That is our duty. That is their authority." How sad is it in today's world where we see so many people in trouble with the IRS? Even more so, how sad is it when we see those of the household of faith in trouble because of taxes? In Romans chapter 13, this is possibly one of the most well-known statements on civil authority and civil government in the New Testament. Romans 13, verses 1 through 7, we'll take the time to read it all. It says, "Let every person be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. And those which exist are established by God. Therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and those who have opposed will receive condemnation. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword for nothing. It is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath upon the one who practices evil. Wherefore it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this you also pay taxes. For rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. Render to all what is due to them, tax to whom tax, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." Paul starts in verse 1. It says, every person be in subjection to civil authority, to government authorities. Why? Why does Paul say that? What is his reasoning? It's there in verse 1 as well. For there is no authority except from God. And those which exist, those authorities which exist, are established by God. Paul's point. Just as we're in subjection to God, we should be in subjection to the authorities around us, the law of the land. God also gave authority to man, to Jesus, the apostles, the government, and to man. We all know these very well. God gave us authority to preach and teach the gospel in Mark 16. He gave us the authority to sing songs of praises and thanks. He also gave us the authority to pray, as seen in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 17. God gave us authority for various things. And we see those constantly throughout the New Testament. It was written for us so that we may know how to serve God, live our lives right, and to know what authority we do have. But there's a point that's often missed. There is a limit to authority. God gave us a limit. In 2 John 9, John says, "Anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. The one who abides in the teaching, he has both the Father and the Son." Just as God gave us authority, he limited our authority. He gives us authority in this book that each and every one of you have before you. If it's not in that book, you don't have, and I don't have, the authority to do it. God gave us both authority and a limit to our authority. In Acts chapter 15, we are given a standard by which to see what we have authority for. We've all been through this countless times, but it never hurts to go back over it again. This is something we need from day to day, constantly, to see that we do what we have the authority to do. In Acts chapter 15, we see the problem in verse 5. It says, "But certain ones of the sect of the Pharisees who had believed stood up, saying, 'It is necessary to circumcise them,'" them being Gentile Christians, "and to direct them to observe the law of Moses." We see three ways three ways that determine whether or not there was authority for this. We see direct statements or commands. Beginning in verse 13, James begins to speak. And he gives us a direct statement from God, quoting from Amos. Beginning in verse 16, it says, "After these things I will return, and I will rebuild the tabernacle of David, which has fallen, and I will rebuild its ruins, and I will restore it, in order that the rest of mankind may seek the Lord, and all the Gentiles who are called by my name, says the Lord, who makes these things known from of old." James sums it up in verse 19. He says, "Therefore, it is my judgment that we do not trouble those who are turning to God from among the Gentiles." James says, we have a statement from God through Amos. He says in verse 19, "It is my belief that we do not trouble them with these things, these questions of circumcision." But how else do we prove or show what or how we get authority? We have approved examples. And in verse 12, we see that. It says, "All the multitude kept silent while they were listening to Barnabas and Paul as they were relating what signs and wonders God had done among them, or through them among the Gentiles." We have an approved example through God doing wonders and miracles amongst the Gentiles. God's miracles and His wonders that He did through Paul and Barnabas show us and showed the Jews here that God approved. God approved of the Gentiles being gospel subjects as well. Finally, we can make necessary inferences. Beginning in verse 7 through about verse 11, Peter begins speaking. In verse 7 it says, "After there had been much debate, Peter stood up and said to them, 'Brethren, you know that in the early days God made a choice among you that by my mouth the Gentiles should hear the word and believe. And God, who knows the heart, bore witness to them, giving them the Holy Spirit, just as He also did to us.'" And here's our key verse. "And He made no distinction between us and them, cleansing their hearts by faith." So we've seen both direct statement, approved example, and a necessary inference made by Peter. And in verse 28, they wrote a letter. And in that letter, they put their conclusion to the matter. Verse 28 said, For it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us to lay upon you no greater burden than these essentials." They found out through a command and direct statement, an approved example, and a necessary inference that the Gentiles did not need to be circumcised in order to be numbered in the household of faith. This is our standard. This is our example for how we do just the same in every problem that arises. If this book doesn't say it, we can't do it. If we can't find a direct statement, approved example, and make a necessary inference, we can't do it. God gave us limits. Remember in 2 John in verse 9, He gave us limits to the authority that we had. So what have we seen tonight? We've seen authority defined. We've seen the authority of God. We've also seen the authority that He gave to man, to Jesus, to the apostles, and to our civil government. So we can draw some conclusions from what we've seen tonight. First off, God is our source of authority. Therefore, He should be obeyed. As we saw in Romans chapter 13 and verse 1, all authority comes from God. He is the source of it, therefore he should be obeyed in every aspect. We can also conclude that since Jesus required authority from God, how much more so do we require authority from God? The very Son of God, who in a sense was God himself, John 1 and verse 1, required authority. How much more so do we? Also, civil authority is from God, and it should be obeyed as well. We can do nothing, and I'll emphasize that, nothing without authority from the Lord. And last, if we do not abide by God's authority, then we are alone. 2 John in verse 9. Anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching does not have God. That makes this serious. That should show us that we need to abide in the teaching of God. We need to abide by His authority. It's a scary world. It's a scary life that we have before us. And we need God. Each and every one of us here needs God. Therefore, we should answer to His authority and the authority that He has delegated. So tonight, if there are any of us here that may have not answered to God's authority, or have never began to answer to God's authority, now is your night. Now is your night. If you need any help, if you need to talk to one of the brethren here about anything, tonight is your night. This is your opportunity to receive help, to receive forgiveness, or to put on the waters of baptism and be buried with Christ. If there is anyone who is